determine what the future will bring, and I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us in studio two very, very special guests, two personal friends, Joan Parrish and Jeannie Soderman. We're going to be talking about the environment. We're going to be talking about Agenda 21. We're going to be talking about the common denominator behind everything going on in the world today, the New World Order, the New World Religion. Now, you can only understand our going to war with Iraq, which really doesn't make any sense unless you understand it is in pursuit of the New World Order. Now, there are other objectives, of course, oil, but, of course, they want to impose their Pax Romana on the countries of that area. They're going to use the war with Iraq to deflect our attention off of the coming economic crisis, and they may have a few little bacteriological warfare attacks, things of that sort, like the last one that they had. You remember the anthrax attack where 5 people died, 13 were injured? Isn't it interesting that the White House, people in the White House, George Bush, Dick Cheney, were started on Cipro on the 11th of September, the night of the attack. They obviously suspected or knew an attack was coming, but isn't it interesting that they didn't tell anybody else? They just let the rest of the people die. Could that thing happen? Certainly Larry Klayman, our friend Larry Klayman for Judicial Watch, is trying to get information from the White House on why they started on Cipro, what they knew, and why they didn't tell anybody, why they allowed the postal workers to go into contaminated the post offices where some of them contracted the disease and died, why they didn't warn the public when, of course, the elite, the president, the vice president, the staff of the White House, were all taking Cipro from the very evening of the attack. Isn't that interesting? If you'd like that information from Larry Klayman, give us a call at 464-8295, or I should say at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We'll be glad to send you that recent email I got from Larry Klayman pointing out how he keeps trying to get the information from the White House and the Freedom of Information, but they're not about to say why they started on Cipro and didn't tell anybody else on the very day. How did they know an attack was coming? Well, the material, the anthrax, obviously came from our own military labs, and it had to be somebody who was vaccinated for that very strain of anthrax. So obviously somebody within the government, but the FBI just can't figure out who it was. Well, this evening we're going to be talking about the move towards world government. And who's going to start off, Jeannie or Joan?
Well, I think our purpose this evening, Dr. Stan, is linking the international treaties to what is happening locally on the regional level, the county level, and the city policies and issues. And so we're going to be connecting the dots of international to the county and the city issues here. I'm going to give a definition of sustainable community. And of course, we hear a lot of definitions of sustainable development, but this is the closest and the best definition I have come across. And it was put out by the Georgia Forestry Commission and the U.S. Forest Service. And this is a quote. And this is what we have to look forward to. A sustainable community is one which provides all of its own needs for air, water, land, food, fiber, and energy resources within its own boundaries. Within its own boundaries. So the sustainable community will be self-sufficient. And that goes right along with the United Nations Biodiversity Assessment Report, where you would have your own gardens for food and also anything that you needed within that bioregion, you would have make it yourself or plant your food yourself.
And there's, of course, you can't produce cars, but then you're not going to have cars. You're not going to be able to produce the advanced types of medicine, but you're not going to have the advanced types of medicine. In fact, in that report you're talking about, Jeannie, which you summarized so beautifully and is included in our sustainable development syllabus, they said that the only way to maintain a population like we had would be to reduce the levels of living levels of the people to that of the Eastern people who live in Eastern Europe. They were referring to the peasants. Status. So the peasant communities are sort of all self-sustained. Sounds like that's what they're really talking about. How could you be a sustainable community, unless, of course, you lowered the living standards and we're no longer dependent on the industrialized society?
And what's so important about what she's referring to is this forestry practices guide. Even though it's the state of Georgia, you'll find that this tracks right on up to the international level. There is a group called the Forest Stewardship Council, and they have these councils all over the United States. And I looked at the internet for the Pacific Coast Working Group, where we're located, and it lists the international treaties and agreements to which the United States is a signatory, and this is regardless of whether or not our Congress has approved it. And the very first one that's listed in this Forest Stewardship Council is the Agenda 21 document. And one thing that's, in this Agenda 21 document in Rio in 1992, if you get a copy of Agenda 21 from the United Nations, you'll find that it contains not only the Agenda 21 document, which is the bulk of it, but it also contains a statement of principles for forest stewardship. So the forest is really at the heart of so much of the sustainability agenda. And it's interesting, as you go through the different federal laws and policies and the local laws and policies, that it talks about the indigenous peoples. And of course, we know that the indigenous peoples throughout the world are the most primitive, or lead the most primitive lifestyles possible. And so you'll find the Indian treaties and statutes in the United States embody a lot of these sustainability initiatives that are attempting to be accomplished. So the whole forest is a very core part of this agenda and very, very interesting to study.
Well, of course, I think, for the person out there who doesn't understand, Agenda 21 is the agenda for the 21st century. The forests are important because they want to, of course, make almost half of the land wilderness area for where the deer and the antelope can play and then have corridors between them. They want to do away with industrialized society. And you say, that's crazy talk. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're dealing with people who have a different worldview, who march to a different drumbeat, who hear a different trumpet call, who dream a different dream. Go ahead, Jeannie.
If we can bring that down to the local level, Joan, Santa Cruz County is in a wildlands project, and it's an active wildlands project. It's called Ventana Wildlands Project, and it's a huge area. It goes from the north, its boundaries are the Russian River, and then on the south, it's Santa Ynez Mountains. Of course, we have the Pacific Ocean on the west, and the lower boundary are the foothill woodlands in the San Joaquin Valley on the east. So it's a huge wildlands project.
But now, what are you going to do with all the people who live here? I mean, these people have long-range plans. They're not going to tell you about it, but they really do intend to get the people off the land. How are they going to go about doing this, Jeannie?
Well, Joan, as I remember, wasn't it about 4 months ago they passed in the Board of Supervisors, it was a uniform fire code. Is that correct?
Well, was
national.
Well, there is a uniform fire code, but there are changes that are made to it periodically, and all of the fire districts throughout the country are expected to approve, to vote on those changes and update them.
You know, basically what you're saying is that somebody at the international level comes up with these plans, and then they're brought down to the federal, state, and into the local fire district, and you elect your local fire commissioners, but they are instructed or they are manipulated or cajoled into voting for the international program, because all of this is being managed from up high, but it is to give the people the impression that, of course, this is a local democracy, or this is local government.
Well, they say it's decentralized, and it certainly is not. It's coming from the very top, like all the United Nations agencies, such as the World Bank, the IMF, the World Trade Organization. But going back to taking the people out of the forest, at the about 3 weeks ago at the supervisors meeting here in Santa Cruz, there was a Maxwell, and he's from Zianti Fire District, and he presented a stricter fire code, and it was called Urban Wireland Interface Code, and they have so many restrictions now. Living up in the mountains, you have to have a certain amount of water, a certain amount of feet away from the house, and it's restrictions on restrictions for the average homeowner in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Now, this is critical because what they're doing is they're gradually weeding the people out of the Santa Cruz Mountains, mainly because of the roads. We have a new roads regulation, too, and the reason that the roads have to be maintained by the private property owners is the fire trucks have to get up in the mountains to take care of fires if they have it at the homes. And so what they plan to do eventually is to get the people out of the Santa Cruz Mountains and bring them down into sustainable communities.
But how are they going to get them out, Juni? What are they going to use? Are they going to simply let the roads go to rack and ruin so that nobody can, the fire engines can't get up there? Are they going to cut off their access to water? Obviously, this whole thing is planned out by these evil and wicked people who are working behind the scenes. So how are they going to do it?
One of the interesting things they've done is a lot of the houses on top of that ridge are what you call off the grid. They don't have any utilities, and they will not be given the permits to hook up to any electricity or to any water. Another way that that's being accomplished in Santa Cruz County is the people at the top of that ridge are not allowed to have fire service. Now, they've started their own little voluntary district, and they did get a little bit of money from the Santa Clara County side, but the Santa Cruz Board of Supervisors refused. Absolutely refused.
What is this up on the ridge between Santa Cruz and Santa Clara County?
Yes, it straddles both counties up at the top there. And then I suppose it's the parks, the state parks, they have put gates across the road to allow less and less access so that people can't get in and out. The people living up there can get in and out. But, you know, all these regulations, they're fencing ordinances and things that are just making it very difficult. So they eventually want to get the people out.
And, of course, they're trying to get the snowmobiles out of the national parks. And they're doing everything they can, really by closing the roads into the forest. And, of course, you can't maintain the forest. You can't clean them up. And then, of course, it leaves them so open to fire. And we've had the most disastrous fires of all time in our forest as a direct result of the environmentalists who are so concerned about the trees. And they really aren't concerned about the trees. And, how would you like to be an animal and burn to death up there? Mm-hmm. Because the environmentalists wouldn't allow a man to come in and keep the forest clean so you didn't have these rampaging fires.
Well, and that's the dichotomy, because if you look at this Pacific Coast Working Group and this Forest Stewardship Council report, it lists in there the things that have to be done to maintain a sustainable forest by their definition. And their definition is that you leave all of the snag trees, all of the slash, all of the brush, so you allow the infestation of pests. So what you've created is this incredible, incredible fire hazard so that you do have fires and, you burn the people out. You burn the animals out.
But, of course, the thing is that they're really not interested in the fires or the trees or the animals. This is all part of a social agenda. And until you understand that if you're talking about sustainable development, if you substitute the word socialism for sustainable, you understand what that is. And socialism is simply a sincere, benevolent, idealistic theory doesn't work without force. It is a return to a feudalistic system with a ruling elite. And, of course, who is it who's funding the environmental movement? Why, of course, people of great wealth are doing it, and they're doing it so they will be able to control us common folks.
Now, in Santa Cruz County, we are in the Ventana Wildlands Project. And in their report is on top of the mountains, they want a wildlife corridor. And these are the animals they want to put in the corridor. A grizzly bear, and they are extremely powerful grizzly bears. And wolves, they're having problems with wolves all over the western states now because they're killing all the cattle.
They want to bring wolves into Santa Cruz?
Yes, right.
Oh, and grizzly bears into Santa Cruz?
Yes.
When did we last have a grizzly bear in Santa Cruz?
Well, they say they've been here before, and we have to get back the animals that roam the mountains before. Mountain lions also they want to bring in.
Yeah, now, what possible use is a mountain lion other than to attack people and kill them? Or to kill cattle or to kill dogs and cats and things like that. But I suppose dogs and cats are owned by people. And since you don't want people, you certainly wouldn't want domesticated animals. Where is PETA when we need them?
Yes, dear PETA. Here again, it talks about watershed degradation, and that means when they talk about watersheds, it's all the way from the source of the water high up in the mountains down to the ocean. And they are very much against dams, diversions, irrigation, channelization, or even changing the channel of the river. They're against livestock grazing and land disturbance, and they're very much in favor of the fish. The fish need the water.
Yeah, but what about the people, you know, by preventing them from putting in dams? Then you get saltwater intrusion, and then you can't have wells. And, of course, you know, if there's no water service, you can't live without water. And so what they're doing is using the fish as a justification, really, for blocking any sort of development, which will allow for a man to live here peacefully and in balance with nature. But they really don't want man living here peacefully, do they? They really, of course, are misanthropes. They don't want man.
Well, everything that I've researched, Dr. Stan, in the last 6 years, it's anti-human. They do not want humans on Earth. And evidently, there'll be a small group of elitists that they figure they will be left to control whatever is left on Earth. So it is anti-human.
Sounds like Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six, doesn't it?
That was a fascinating book, and I really liked the ending, but we won't say the ending because it was a great book.
If you haven't read Rainbow Six by Tom Clancy, he's obviously read some of Jeannie's material and Joan's material, but I will tell you, if you haven't read that book, Rainbow Six by Tom Clancy, he, of course, lays out the whole scenario we're talking about tonight. And, of course, Tom does a tremendous amount of research before he writes his book.
And, you know, if you follow all of this out to its ultimate end, you know, we see woven through this this whole spiritual agenda of nature above man. But when you get to the end of it, you find out that there is a an economic incentive here for a few. I was in Johannesburg, South Africa in September, just several months ago, and the United States came out saying that they were going to be sponsoring the United States with South Africa or the whole African continent, the Congo Basin Forest Project, and it will put millions and millions of just fabulous forest under a trust. And, of course, involved in this was the American Forest and Paper Association that was going to work in collaboration on a sustainable forest partnership in the Congo Basin. And so these are the people that will then be allowed to go in and reap these phenomenal resources that were measured in the billions and billions of dollars. So there's an economic incentive for a few to partner with this. And of course, I asked the Undersecretary of State there, Turner, who is representing our government, if this was a debt for environment swap.
And what was his response?
well, he looked away to the South African ambassador from the United States, and he was kind of shocked to get that question, and he was asking whether he should answer, and they decided to answer, and he said, well, Yes. He said we don't have it all structured yet, but we are structuring a debt for environment swap.
Now, would you explain to our listeners what that is? Because, if they're not acquainted with how we have indebted all these nations of Africa, we give large sums of money to the ruthless dictator. He puts it into the Swiss bank account, and now his country owes all this money to the international financiers. So pick it up from there.
Well, this is a phenomenal technique because, yes, you have your Bretton Woods institutions, World Bank, IMF, going in, loaning money to countries, and then they're not able to repay it. You also have industry going in and setting up plants or investing money. You have banks from the United States. And these entities all have to give up something. But what the United States does then is we will forgive their debts to us, and all of the others involved in this partnership will forgive their debts. They'll require them to come up with a certain amount of cash, just a very reduced amount in as a token payment on this debt within so many days, and then the entire thing is forgiven. And this is in exchange for taking their environmental resources and putting them into this type of a sustainable project where we can then go in and tell them how they will be used and managed, and then our partners, such as the American Forest and Paper Association, can go in and mine those resources and sell them for incredible profits.
And so basically what happens is that, these countries have to give over their natural resources to these international conglomerates, which are part of this whole corporate fascist system that is being established, the New World Order, the New World Religion. And really, I'm sure that they weren't very anxious to answer your question. Is this a debt swap, in essence? And so what we're doing is taking away the heritage of the blacks, and of course giving it, turning it over to the great corporations. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. But of course, what's really the height of this whole thing is the World Bank and the IMF are lending money that they created out of nothing, this phony fiat money that they're using, and in return for the phony money that they created out of nothing, they're getting, of course, the natural resources of the Congo, and they're doing the same thing in South and Central America, aren't they, Jeannie?
Oh, very definitely. It's called concessional loans. And they actually said what Joan mentioned in Our Global Neighborhood, this little book that was written by the Commission on Global Governance, and it came out in 1995. And I was just rereading the book, and it's phenomenal on the information, because everything is coming to fruition right now on what's happening. And they did mention about forgiving the debts of the third world countries, but they are getting the resources, such as your minerals and your oil and your gas. So they just are not the people that love to just help humanitarian causes. What they want is all the earth resources.
Incidentally, that's a very good book. Yours is very, looks like you've read it about 100 times. The book, Our Global Neighborhood, is available by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get information on how to get this book published by the United Nations, sort of a Mein Kampf for what's going on today, written by the elitists, for elitists, and you can, of course, be one of them. You can read their book. You can read their plan. It will really, literally blow your mind.
Now, this goes into business. Sustainable development is economy, which is the business, the environment, and social equity or social justice. And the business part is not really talked about. And that is so important, because in Santa Cruz County, we have the Santa Cruz County Business Council. They did have a website, the first of about May of 2002, last year. There is no website now. You cannot reach them. The only way you can call, and I just did, is there's an answering device. Now, I have looked at who's coming into the Santa Cruz Business Council, and they have traveling facilitators that come into the county. This is how they work. There's a man that's been trained to coordinate the businesses to go into sustainable business. And the last one we had come through Santa Cruz County, he came from Albuquerque, New Mexico in 1998, stayed here for 5 years, and now he has just gone to Tracy, California, to be the president of the Chamber of Commerce. And what happens is the Santa Cruz Business Council is connected with the World Business Council. So everything is connected from the very apex to the national, to the state, and to the county. And they connect with the Chamber of Commerce, United Way, and also the Workforce Investment Board. And he still has a website on the internet, and he actually was a co-founder of Shared Vision. It was a plan created in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Shared Vision is Agenda 21. So he was here to coordinate everything. Now he's gone. He's going to probably spend a couple years in Tracy. So these are traveling facilitators for the business part of sustainable development.
Mm-hmm. And well, this thing is all very carefully coordinated. I'm some people, I'm sure you get in there, why, you're going to be well taken care of. But the whole idea is, how do you get the freedom away from the people? Take away their property rights. Take away their ability to live where they want to live. Gradually restrict the rights of the people a little bit at a time, without their even realizing what's happening, because it's all done in the name, of course, of making a better world. And, of course, who would want to, who would want to deprive the grizzly bears and the mountain lions of the right to live in our mountains along with the people?
Now, I've gone to several meetings around San Francisco Bay Area, and it's very interesting because the business portion of sustainable development comes up. And they have mentioned that all law now created is now based on international environmental law. And everything will be a complete union of economy, environment, and social justice. That is, all economic decisions will depend on environment and social justice.
Well, that sounds very good, but what they're really talking about is a fascist society.
That's exactly right.
It was interesting in Johannesburg to see all of the businesses come together and come to the forefront ahead of the lesser NGOs. One of the things that was put out by one of these foundations that was involved with the business, in fact, the Heinrich Boll Foundation.
This is in Johannesburg.
In Johannesburg. They talked about the corporations, and they said that they can continue to do what they're doing on the condition that they do it better. And conditions are really what it's all about. There's a legal framework that's been developed, and it's being implemented incrementally to bring all of the businesses into line. In fact, there's a document called the Global Compact, which sets out things that businesses must do to conform and comply, and they have to assess and monitor. I am affiliated with the largest property casualty insurer in this country, and volunteerism is one of the topics that was put forward at the Johannesburg Summit. And it becomes an oxymoron in the globalist socialist context because it's no longer voluntary volunteerism. It is compulsory. And my insurance company, in order to comply with these international criteria, has been sending me an email requesting a documentation and enumeration of all of the volunteer hours that I have contributed in the past year government board, the fire board that I'm involved with, and any other voluntary activities. So this is how it encroaches and creeps into our lives.
I'm going to bring that down to local, Joan. And I was at a meeting where one of the speakers said, the International Agenda 21, Chapter 30, is the 800-pound gorilla. We cannot have sustainable development unless we have the businesses going along with us. And what they want to do, they want the cities, the counties, to create an initiative that will say that we can only have sustainable businesses in our area.
We're going to have to take a break. We got so wrapped up in what we were doing, we forgot to go to the break. We'll be right back here in just a moment with our guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when I have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our program regularly and believe that there's a problem and would like to be part of our team doing something about it to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And you do that simply by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And of course, those who join the Radio Liberty family get our four best tapes of the month, our monthly newsletter. Of course, if you'd like to simply get a free copy of our last newsletter and you haven't had one before, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Our December newsletter deals, of course, with what's happening economically. And, of course, the occult foundation of our monetary system. Most people, sort of look at you a little askance when you talk about the occult foundation of our monetary system. But you see, our monetary system is a fraud. It is based upon fiat money that has absolutely nothing behind it. It's, it's like a Ponzi scheme. It's worked for a time, but of course within the last 3 years, the Fed and the Fannie Mae and the Freddie Mac and these various government organizations have increased the money supply in 3 years, $5 trillion. That's federal debt. Federal debt has gone up. Oh, I should say not federal, but overall debt. That includes housing debt and corporate debt, and then, of course, the money supply has gone up $5 trillion. It took us, the whole thing is all together only $30 trillion, and they're pouring out money like it's going out of style. Why? Because they know what's about to happen. This whole thing's going to come cascading down around our shoulders. That's why we have to have a war with Iraq, so we can blame all the problems on the wicked Saddam Hussein. We can't blame him on the wicked Osama bin Laden now. We have to blame the wicked Saddam Hussein. But the truth of the matter is, you can only play this game so long. And as Lord Keynes said, eventually we all die. And when asked about what happened when the system fell apart. And they've always known it was going to collapse. Alan Greenspan recently made some remarks to that effect, that the only true source and basis of a monetary system was one based upon gold. But be that as it may, and of course we'll have that quotation in my latest newsletter. That's the January newsletter. But right now we just want to encourage you to go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. You can pull our newsletters down there go to our website. You can listen to our programs 5 hours a day and not get much of anything done. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will tell others about our programs and encourage them to begin listening, whether they agree or not. Hopefully, as time goes by, they may initially feel that we are really quite insane. After a while, they may begin to fear that we're not. America is about to lose its freedom because the good people are not involved. And we'll be back in just a moment with our two very, very special guests here, and welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Dr. Stan, and in studio with us right now is Jeannie Soderman. And Jeannie, of course, spends a great deal of time researching what's going on locally as far as the Agenda 21, the other programs. And she's down at the Board of Supervisors. She's attending meetings, gathering material. Joan Paris certainly goes to the international meetings. And both of them are sitting across from me, the desk strewn with papers, documents, and all sorts of information that every American should know. But you're not being told because of the controlled media. I mean, after all, if the average American knew that they planned to take 50% of the land and put it into wilderness, 25% and put it into border areas, and then force people out of their homes into sustainable communities, where they can be watched and regulated at, all the time. To get them out of their cars and onto bicycles, their utopian society, of course, is what they have over in Beijing today. The only trouble is the people over in Beijing don't like it. They want to be more like America. But be that as it may, the elite knows what's best for us, don't they? And, of course, we common folks have to go along with their plans. But what people don't understand is behind this whole thing are the dark spiritual forces that both Jeannie and, of course, Joan have been alluding to. So who's going to take off first?
Well, I'd like to finish on the sustainable development business portion. Chapter 30 was very important at this seminar. And they did say it was the 800-pound gorilla, and they need business to go along with sustainable development. Now, this is what they said, that nature understands there is no waste. And so here again, they're saying that the businesses should get in line and have no waste. They said it is not environmental prevention. It is restoration of the harm we have done. And, excuse me, they want a filter when the businesses come in to the county or the city. There will be an initiative. And before that business can come into the area, they must pass a filter. Number one, is it good for the economy? Will it presence build our capacity for sustainability? In other words, does it produce products that have mercury or lead or asbestos? And do they take their end product and do they recycle it again? So the ultimate decision on what businesses will come into the area, whether it's a county initiative or a city initiative, it will be the council. This is not free enterprise. They will have to go through this filter process if they're a sustainable business. There's a wonderful book that I just got from England. It's called Walking the Talk, and it's the business case for sustainable development. And Joan, wasn't that talked about in Johannesburg?
In all of the business council sessions, this book was touted as the guidebook and the source for all of the corporations that were participating there. And Jeannie, I'm looking at Agenda 21, Chapter 30 that you're referring to, and it does in fact refer to businesses producing with less waste and being far more efficient. And it talks about these partnerships and cooperation that business must be involved in. And it talks about passing on the cost, because it's going to be a lot more expensive, and passing on the cost to consumers, and a new type of accounting that will internalize the environmental costs into the pricing mechanisms of the products. But
of course, we won't be able to compete with other countries if we've got all these additional costs on our products. We won't be able to sell them to our people because they can make them cheaper in China. We won't be able to sell them, we won't be able to export them because we'll be competing with the Chinese. So what they're really doing by putting on all these environmental regulations and workman's compensation regulations, and of course, with our high wage scales, and now the new legislation we have here in California where if you're going to have a baby and your husband wants to take off for 6 weeks, he gets 6 weeks with pay. What we're going to do is simply price American industry out of the market.
Well, and that's the bottom line. The American economy is simply a hollowed out shell. It is not competitive, and our industries have been forced to move offshore, not just because they want to, but because, as you say, of these types of regulations, and it is not a level playing field at the global level. The United States and a few of the other highly industrialized countries must comply to a far higher degree of environmental rules and regulations than China or Mexico or any of these other countries. So, in fact, we're not competitive. And then if you read the National Security Report for the 21st century that, you know, germinated this whole homeland security thing, it talks about how we have to, lower any barriers to trade so that we have absolutely no protection, and we're looking at the absolute obliteration of the American economy. Chapter 30 of Agenda 21 also talks about following and implementing these codes of conduct in business, such as the Business Charter on Sustainable Development of the International Chamber of Commerce. And I simply point that out because I want to connect that all of these things go hand in hand. We're not making this up, but it's in the Agenda 21 documents connecting the Chamber of Commerce to this United Nations program.
But do you think the average member of the Chamber of Commerce has any idea what's really going on, that he's being manipulated by the professional facilitators who come in and lecture them and and just sort of twist the reality and make them think they're really being progressive and this is the way to go along?
And how dare any of us try to inform anybody, because we're so often the objects of scorn for trying to point out what a person with only moderate intelligence has available to them on the internet, if they would simply take the time to educate themselves and open their eyes and become aware of what's happening in our world.
Now, 4 years ago, Claire Moxley and myself went down to the Watsonville Chamber of Commerce.
Ooh.
Yes. And we met the head guy there, a couple of women, and we laid it all out what was happening. And they said that if this is so big, then we can't do anything. And that was the end of our meeting. Pretty devastating. That was 4 years ago.
And, of course, things are moving at such an amazing, amazing pace at the present time. But, apropos of what you're saying, Joan, these people know exactly what they're doing. They know they're destroying the industrial base of America because, of course, the whole idea is from each according to their ability to each according to their need. It is transferring America's industry and wealth to other countries. It will end up impoverishing our people and raising our living standards to that of the Chinese peasant, but that's exactly what they want. But if they were to tell the American people that, why, there'd be a great outcry. But, of course, if you couch this in the terms of the poor little wolf and the poor impoverished mountain lion, and of course, who can be in favor of lead and mercury, polluting our environment by these industries coming in? And yet, of course, if people just forget about all the talk and look at what's happening, it should be obvious that we are on a one-way road towards the destruction of America. And of course, today I was sworn in at the Republican Central Committee and swore to uphold the Constitution and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Who are the domestic enemies? Why are they the people who work for the great foundations and the environmental movement? They're using the environmental movement. They're using the idealism of so many people to push a specific international agenda.
Well, I used to belong to Nature Conservancy, World Wildlife Fund, and Greenpeace. And I was with them for about maybe 6 or 7 years. And then I started doubting what was happening and started researching. And that's when I found that at the very top of the environmental organizations, it was taken over by the very rich and the very powerful. And what they're doing, the Rockefellers and the royalty throughout the world, is they're using our emotions that we love nature and using that so they can take away our freedoms. It's such a devious but a brilliant plan.
No, it really is. They're so smart. How can we compete with them? They're so much smarter than we are. But, of course, we have truth on our side, and not far whether it be where we are. I mean, they may have all the money in the world. They may control the armies of the world. They may control the governments and the foundations, the corporations. But we have truth and God on our side, and at least we hope we are on God's side rather than he's on our side. We're on God's side, and of course, these people on the other side are just plain wicked. Even though a lot of them don't understand what it's all about, some of them, the leaders of this, know exactly what it's about.
Do we want to bring up all the commissions that are in the county now? Because everyone is appointed by the supervisor of that district to go into all these commissions, like the Water Advisory Commission, the Fish and Game Commission, the Children's Commission, you name it. They have about 20 commissions. And what I'd like to say is, if you know a lot and research a lot, that you can't get on the commissions. Joan and I have tried, and they lie to you and say there's no openings available when there really is. They want the average person that doesn't know too much and that they can mold to their consensus plan. So that's happened to you, Joan, right?
Right. It was several years ago. There was an opening on the Transportation Commission, and I was doing a television show, and the people there were very involved in the community. They said, oh, you should go down. There's an opening on the commission. So I ran over to the Board of Supervisors. Oh, no, there's no opening.
And, you know, even in the little town that I live in, La Selva Beach, they have a small association called the La Selva Beach Improvement Association. And I have volunteered for Neighborhood Watch, for helping out on any of the parties that they have, anything, and just quiet. I am ostracized in that community because I have spoken up against the United Nations and the plan that they have for us. And it's interesting, they're planning to change their charter in La Selva Beach. And if you look at it, everything is done for the good of the community, the common good in the community. There's nothing about private property rights.
Nothing about the individual.
No, nothing at all.
Communism, you might call it.
Yes,
communityism,
right.
Or I think they call it communism, right.
Yeah, communitarianism. What is it?
Communitarianism.
Communitarianism, right. Yeah. And so here again is, even in the small cities, if you speak out now, you're ostracized. It's interesting in this book on Walking the Talk, The Business Case for Sustainable Development, there's one sentence that is very, very critical. It's the key. And they talk about non-government organizations, NGOs, and they talk about the meetings. They say, in general, local community residents don't suspect them, which are the NGOs, of having ulterior motives.
The people don't suspect they have ulterior motives, but do they?
That makes it easier to set up a dialogue and later a partnership.
Isn't that nice? So people don't realize that there's an agenda behind the whole thing. They're sort of bragging about how stupid we are, aren't they?
Well, they think they have it in the bag, and they're very boisterous, and they're very outgoing now and saying, this is the way it is, and you're not very smart if you don't go along with us.
Well, I think that was the way it was in Hitler's Germany and Benito Mussolini's Italy and Stalin's Russia and Mao's China. But people don't understand that there are two things. You either are an individual and free, or you are part of a community and you lose your individualism. Now, we have to have some sort of local structure. But, of course, it has to be built upon those basic American concepts of life, liberty, and property. And if there are no property rights, there is no liberty. And they know that. That's why they want to take away the property rights. They understand that freedom rests upon property rights. But that goes back to the writings of John Locke, picked up by Blackstone, and then, of course, immortalized in our Constitution, in our Bill of Rights, immortalized in the Declaration of Independence, that talked about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But Jefferson had used the word life, liberty, and property. Somebody came along and said, no, let's put in pursuit of happiness. But you will never see the words life and liberty used in the Constitution, except life, liberty, and property. They're always used together. Why? Because they go together, because they came out of Locke, and Locke's writing upon which so much of the Constitution and our concepts of freedom rest.
And interestingly, out of that Stockholm Earth Conference was this UNEP program, and of course UNEP put together this Global Biodiversity Assessment Report upon which this whole supposed environmental agenda rests. And in that you'll find that one of the things they claim is not sustainable is private property, which is huge.
Okay, and Tori, the Global Biodiversity Assessment is an 1,142-page report put out by the Cambridge University Press, but it really comes out of was that the Second Earth Summit, the one that was held in Rio, or did it come out of Stockholm?
It was published closer to the 92, but...
Right, it was published in 1995 after the 92 Earth Summit, too.
But they all work together. I mean, all of these various organizations. The first Earth Summit was in 1972. The second one was in 92. The third one was in 97. The last one was in the year 2002 in Johannesburg. And, of course, you were at the 97 one, weren't you, as well as
yes.
You? And, of course, you have to understand this is where the elite meet. It was all planned ahead of time by Prince Charles on his yacht, the Britannia, a year ahead of time. Al Gore was there. The corporate leaders, the financiers of the world were there in 1991. And then, of course, it was presented as a fait accompli at the so-called Earth Summit Conference, the Second Earth Summit in Rio de Janeiro, with Marie Strong presiding.
Well, in 1976, at Habitat One Conference, the first conference on habitat, the United Nations did put out a statement saying that private property does create wealth, and that creates social inequity. In other words, they said private property, it cannot be because it's not shared. And they want to share everything.
Except, of course, they want to share our property, but not theirs.
Well, that's true.
This whole thing is put together the people of great wealth. It started in 72 with a book called The Limits of Growth, came out of the Club of Rome. Here, multimillionaires, you know, multi-billionaires, you know, the royalty of Europe, Gorbachev is part of this. No, he wasn't part of it back then, but, you know, the king and a queen of Spain and the queen of the Netherlands and, you know, the royalty. These people want you to share your property, but they don't want to share theirs.
Now, environmental law, I think we ought to talk about Assembly Bill 2486 put up by Fred Keeley. And this is devastating for California. And I'm sure that they have similar uniform laws throughout the United States. And the name of the Assembly Bill is Environmental Enforcement and Training Act of 2002. And it was just recently passed. And what they plan to do is have roving prosecutors come into the districts in California. And they will be deputized by the district attorney. And that roving prosecutor will prosecute environmental crimes. Do you have anything on that, Joan, at all?
Well, what's really interesting about this is, of course, it also trains firefighters and all of your, you know, emergency response personnel involved with this. And, of course, we know that cities and counties are so strapped for cash because the state has taken so much of the resources out of the counties. This bill provides a means for them to get money back because any local agency whose jurisdiction is involved with this enforcement, as long as they participate and go along with it, then they can receive public resources. And of course, with these types of things, all of your laws become environmental laws, and violators are then defined as terrorists. And that
violators are defined as terrorists.
I'm putting that into my own words.
Okay.
Well, we'll become criminals. That's what we'll become, Joan. They also train policemen. They call them peace officers here, investigators, firefighters, public prosecutors, and state and local environmental regulators. And so they actually have a system of whoever brought the action, meaning whoever started this environmental crime investigation, they get 50% of the monies paid out. The other 50% will be paid to the agency, which is responsible for the investigation and the action.
In other words, if they could convict you of a crime, then they get money. That they actually have a vested financial interest in going after people, is what you're saying, Jeannie?
Exactly, yeah. So the counties are so strapped for money right now, well, they're going to go after everyone on environmental crimes like oil in the streams and pesticides in the streams and so forth. It's interesting here where it says in this bill, if a reward is paid to a person, the amounts of the award shall be deducted from the amount of the criminal or civil penalty. In other words, if there's a person that tells on someone else or a neighbor tells on you, then that person will be rewarded with a money bonus.
Gee, it's like it was in the Stasi over in East Germany, isn't it?
Just amazing on this bill. And the front page of the Santa Cruz Sentinel on last Sunday had a wonderful two-page propaganda on Fred Keeley and how he was so wonderful on the environment.
What would you expect from a Dow Jones-owned newspaper?
Yes, that's right. Santa Cruz Sentinel is owned by Ottawa out of Canada, and they're part of the Dow Jones.
And people have to, I mean, really the most incredible thing is most people think the Wall Street Journal is conservative. It's owned by the same conglomerates or the same philosophy that owns the New York Times, the Washington Post, but you've got to get the suckers to believe that the Wall Street Journal is conservative, and they've got a lot of great articles in there. But they're never going to tell you the truth about what this is all about. And on the really important issues, they're going to be on the same side as the New York Times and the Washington Post. But you never want to give the suckers an even chance. You want to have them believe that our major newspapers are going to give us the truth. That the Wall Street Journal and the Reader's Digest and National View and the American Spectator are conservative. Well, they're about as conservative as Rush Limbaugh is, the finest conservative that money can buy. We're going to have to a bit adieu to our listeners up there in the Great Northwest, and we're going to be back, of course. And this is going to be put into a four-tape set. So if you're out there in the North, and, of course, you'd like to hear the entire programs, and we've had two previous programs with Jeannie and Joan, and we'll be having this one, of course, put together in a four-tape set, so you can get all of them at a later date. I think we'll call it the Wisdom of Jean and Joan or something, maybe the truth about environmentalism or Agenda 21. We'll let you know when it's available anyway. And this is the time when we just ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, because if the American people don't turn back to God, God's going to turn his back on the American people. And remember Radio Liberty, pray for our provision and protection. Until tomorrow, Dr. Stan, goodbye, and may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And you don't have to be bashful if you want to call in. If you have a question for either of our guests this evening, we have Joan Paris, who has attended the international conferences and gone all over the world to bring you the information. And Jeannie Soderman, who's really dedicated herself to going to the local meetings. How she stands these meetings, I don't know. She just was up in a big, expensive meeting. Was that San Jose, Jeannie?
Oh, yeah, it was up near San Francisco.
Okay, fine. And so she goes to the meetings, and, of course, she's the whole idea is that we have an international agenda that is being imposed locally. Everything is imposed from the top down. If you think any of this is bottom-up, you just don't understand. They want to give you the impression to believe that we have representative government. We do not. We have imposed government from above. And our local commissions, our fire commission, and our water commission, they're all, of course, given these directives from above, and then they're here to enact them. And, you know, of course, they'll have facilitators there. They'll have people planted in the audience. They'll have people working on the board, these professional facilitators, to convince the people who, you know, they're all making a living. They sit on the board, you know, because it's a public service. But it's amazing to me how readily people are manipulated by people who've been trained in manipulation. So let's get back. Where are we going next, Alan?
Well, I wanted to talk about the environmental law. Jeannie was just mentioning this Keeley environmental bill, where they will be sending roving prosecutors in the countryside. And I wanted to tie that back to the international, because when I was in South Africa preceding the Sustainable Development Summit, there was an environmental law conference in Durban. And it fascinated me. Some of their material said that the fatal flaw was how to translate all of these policies and treaties into operational laws that could be implemented and enforced. And when I was at this environmental law conference, over and over again it was stated that it was time to move from monitoring to policing. And there were papers distributed on how to set up effective legal regimes for the enforcement of these environmental laws. And, of course, the Supreme Court justices attended this. There were people from the courts, the legal system, academia, people from all over the world. And the object, of course, was on how to implement this in our laws. So it's kind of interesting that this Keeley law, which is so severe and really diabolical, was actually passed while I was in South Africa, and all of this was being transacted. So it's a process that's been going on for decades, but it's interesting to see how it's moving along.
And of course, the thing is that what they're trying to do is bring American law in line with international law, and totally eliminating the Constitution. I mean, these people, our elected representatives swear to uphold the Constitution. Fred Keeley swore to uphold the Constitution and defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. He's an enemy of the Constitution because, of course, private property is the very essence of our freedom. But, of course, these fascists, they don't care what they've sworn because they don't believe in a God. In fact, they don't even ask you to swear, so help me God, anymore. The oaths really have no meaning because, of course, who are we swearing to? We're swearing to our next-door neighbor? An oath only has meaning if you swear it to God, and knowing full well that, of course, there is punishment either in this world or the next world for violating an oath that you've sworn to God. But the tragedy is that most of our leaders don't even believe in the Constitution. It's a formality, and it's about time people begin to understand the foundation of our freedom, which is, of course, the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Federalist Papers.
On international law, this is what's happening locally in all the general plans of the cities. They're bringing into conformity all the international law into the general plans of the city and the county. And that's why throughout all the United States you have the revising of the general plans. Now it's very interesting, Corralitos, which is in Santa Cruz County, we have asked for the latest draft of the Corralitos general plan. They don't know where it is. We have asked for the documents that they have worked from to create this general plan. And the facilitator was a Mountjoy, and he is actually works for the United States Agricultural and USDA. And we even called him and asked him where the draft plan is. Nobody knows where the draft plan is. This is amazing.
I know it's sort of like when the California Medical Association hierarchy was trying to push socialized medicine on the state of California. And, of course, they wouldn't let any of the doctors see their plan. And I demand we were going to vote on it, and I said, I've got to see the plan. Oh, we just don't have it available. It's not completed yet. I said, we're going to vote on it. You mean you don't have a copy? Well, we do have a copy, but, you can't have a copy. You can only read it, but there'll have to be somebody with you when you read this, you know. Mm-hmm. It was the most incredible thing. They sat me down. They had about a 120-page document, and I've got 20 minutes to read this 120-page document. Before we go on the floor, there were only two doctors who read this before the doctors voted in favor of socialized medicine without realizing that their leaders were betraying them and the people of California. Fortunately, that initiative failed. The people had a lot more judgment than the members of the House of Delegates of the California Medical Association. That I was ridiculed, and I said, don't you understand? This is a program for socialized medicine. Why are you doctors who believe in individual freedom voting for it? Oh, we got to do something, you know. Sometimes, what's that old saying, don't just stand there, do something. And, of course, my reply was, don't do something, just stand there. Go ahead, Joan. Jeannie, go ahead.
I'd like to talk about water because I feel that's so important, because once the water is centralized and it's governed by the state or the feds, then we have no recourse. They will allocate the water, how much they want to give us. And I'm going to tie this with the World Bank water policy that we have at Radio Liberty. There is a 7-page analysis, and it goes into how they're going to manage the water. And here they're starting to do different tiers of water rates now. And so this is what it says in the World Bank water policy, that there will be rate tiers depending what you use the water for, how much you're going to use it. And this is the same type of policy that they have in China right now.
Isn't that interesting? Well, one day they'd like it to live that same sort of happy life they have in China.
They say like the average American family uses about anywhere from 75 gallons to 150 gallons a day. In the International Agenda 21, it does say for basic needs, people should have 10.5 gallons per day.
In other words, we're wasting all that water.
Oh, yes, and especially on the plants. And this is why they're talking about having native plants on your lawn, because they take up less water. And the water is so important, because what we're seeing now in Watsonville, they want to bring in a federal pipeline. And as soon as the feds have control of the pipeline, they can do whatever they want. They can allocate so much water to the farmers. And I feel the farming is actually, they're taking away the land of the farmers through regulations and also through the water where they cannot grow certain crops. And they will tell the farmers what crops to grow, what crops don't take as much water as others. Like rice takes a lot of water. Santa Cruz City has now, they've had about 3 public hearings. It's called the Creek and Wetlands Ordinance. And you can actually go into a website. It's www.creeksiderights.com. And these are people fighting for their rights on their private property. What they plan to do is they have now about 100-foot setback from any stream. It's the buffer zone again. And it's not just a stream. It could be a cement channel that channels water. And they want to bring that setback to 200 feet from the stream. And so here again, it's confiscating private property. And this goes along with the Clean Water Initiative put out by Gore, where they wanted to take buffer zones along all the rivers. They wouldn't have to be flowing all the time. It would be intermittent rivers. And they would want that 200-foot buffer zone from the river. So now they want to pass this. There are a lot of homes that are just built on the side of the rivers. And there again, they can not give permits. Say if the home burns down, if they're not in conformity to the laws of the Santa Cruz City Building Department, then they will not be able to rebuild. So what this is, it's a little bit like getting the people out of the mountains on not giving them permits, is they're getting the people away from the water. They want control of the water.
And I think it's really so fascinating, the World Bank water policy. And Jeannie's done a wonderful job of summarizing that. And we'll send any of our listeners who would like a free copy of her summary of the World Bank water policy. But you see, to control the water, you control the people. That's what it's all about. They're not interested in the water. We're running out of water. The world's running out of water. You know, water is more valuable in Saudi Arabia than oil, and on and on and on. And of course, this is all a cover from the real goal, control of you and your future. So if you'd like a free copy of the World Bank Water Policy, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-MORE. Now, you really should get our Sustainable Development Syllabus, because that does contain the World Bank Water Policy and the Earth Charter and so much more, going into population control and population control agenda. The Earth, the Sustainable Development Syllabus has all of that. But if you just want the World Bank Water Policy and you promise to put it to good use and help us get the word out, we'll send you the 7-page document free of charge by calling us 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. But you got to use it. Don't just get it and sitting on a chair someplace or on a table. You have to help us let people understand this whole scam on water is being rigged. Why? Control the water, you control the people. Turn off the water, the people have to move. And that's what they're doing up at the Klamath and, of course, the whole thing up there. And, of course, if people finally got some water back, and now, of course, they're saying, well, they're responsible for all the fish dying. I don't really know what's going on up there. I haven't been able to follow that. But, you know very well that whatever they did it intentionally wrong. It's sort of like the way that they have been putting people on death row. They've been putting innocent people on death row so they can see, they said, see how terrible capital punishment is? And yet time after time after time, the prosecutors withheld information that would have exonerated the people. Why? Why? Because they wanted to do away with capital punishment, the same way they've used the 3 strikes and you're out legislation, which was supposedly for 3 violent felonies. And so what do? Why, you steal a pencil after you've had 2 felonies and you're in for life. Why? Because they create the problem, and then, of course, ridiculously, and then, of course, they've got a solution. everything is a dialectic. And you better understand how they're using it. Right now, water is the big thing that they're talking about. And how often do you pick up the paper and, oh, they're cutting off water, to Los Angeles from the Colorado River. And of course, Jeannie's pointing out how they're going to bring in this pipeline. And they blocked building the dams, they blocked building the reservoirs so they could create the problem. And right here in Santa Cruz, 30 years ago, they wanted to build a dam, a Zayanti dam, and they blocked that because of the Zayanti humpback slug that was non-existent. Why? Because they want the problem. And now they have a solution. Control you and your property.
Well, if you can provide your own water with dams and reservoirs and percolation ponds, you can be self-directed, you can be independent, you can be free. But if you create a problem that you don't allow the people to control and manage their water resources, of which we have an overabundance in this area, if they were managed properly, then you can enslave them. And you can charge whatever you want then. And that's what this pipeline is all about. Interestingly, when I was at the... there was a UN summit in Mexico.
There's a Monterrey? Or?
Monterrey, Mexico, right. Financing for Development. And you had some of the largest water companies in the world, one from France. And, of course, again, there is also this whole fiduciary aspect to it. And, mm-hmm. And of course, they come in and then provide the infrastructure and can charge whatever they want then for the water. And a family in South Africa that I spoke to whose water was privatized had their rates increased by 500%. So again, ultimately, it's part of this economic globalization. And here you have this huge transnational corporation that will reap the benefits of the dilemma that was really created to control.
It's just like deregulation of electricity here. What deregulation? We can have competition, bring the prices down. No, they knew it was going to happen. But who would have gone along with it if we told them that every other place this had ever been used, it had skyrocketed the prices. It did in Chile, it did in England, it did it in Brazil. They knew exactly what was going to happen. Well, they said, well, gee, there's one place back in the east someplace where the prices actually came down, so we want competition. And the suckers went along with it. And the same thing is true of water. They're bringing a major corporation's going to buy up the water rights up in Felton, just a little community very close to where we live. And of course, where is the public outcry? We have public utilities. Why? To benefit the public. The whole idea is to do away with something that'll benefit the public. And of course, increase the prices. And, of course, increase the control.
And here are the kind of conditions they put them under. Bleary-eyed officials negotiated under a looming self-imposed deadline Tuesday to create a deal that would stave off drastic cuts to Southern California's water supply. And this is a billion-dollar deal involving water for the farms in the Imperial Valley, water from the Colorado River. And so all over the state and, of course, all around the world, water is being used to take people hostage and dictate how their lives will be lived.
And people don't understand it's all coordinated.
Remember about a week ago, it rained for 4 days straight. And the fifth day, we had sun, but that same day, the Santa Cruz Sentinel came out and said, now folks, even though it's rained, we still have a water problem. I could not believe that.
Well, the thing is, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and it's said by your local newspaper over and over again, people will believe it. They couldn't believe the newspapers would lie to us.
It's a little bit like Goebbels, the propaganda in Hitler's Germany.
Local water districts, they have study after study after study, and they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on studies, and they never do anything. Why? Because they want the problems.
In the World Bank water policy, there's going to be social fees. In other words, if you have a little more money than your neighbor is poorer than yourself, you're going to have to help him get his water subsidies for the poor. They're going to have benefit taxes. If you receive any benefit from your land, you will be taxed on that benefit. And also there will be pollution charges. You will be charged a pollution tax for any pollution on your land. And that reminds me of the last conference I went to. The facilitator said, nature knows no waste, zero waste. And it brought me back to the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report on unsustainable cemeteries were unsustainable. There would be no waste of human bodies. And so that brings the question up, what are they going to do with the human bodies once we pass away? Either if you burn us, then that creates carbon dioxide and foul the air, so they just might recycle us.
Well, actually, what they did in communist China was they ground the bodies up and used them for chicken feed. Let's go to Jeanette here. But, of course, we would never want to tell the American people that because, of course, they might not want to eat eggs from China. Hi, Jeanette. How are you doing?
Oh, thanks a lot.
Is this a Jeanette who called this afternoon to tell us how wonderful the Miracle 2 product, pardon me, the Be Alive product
yes.
were?
Yes, it's the same one that has not called for a while.
We've missed you, Jeanette.
Well, thank you. I'm calling because I want to, Jeannie's comment made me think of something. After the last rain, I also heard on the radio that we did have a good rain and things might be better, you know, in the coming months. But the experts say maybe things will not get better.
And these are telling
people to watch out for the words that these news readers say.
You know, it's the most amazing thing, Jeanette. I remember 20 years ago when they were talking about pollution, you know, and we got to do away with the automobile, and we got to restrict the automobile driving and all that. And I said, look, I mean, the biggest polluter is the diesel. Oh, no, you don't understand. There's no pollution from diesel smoke. I mean, you may see that black smoke coming out of there, but, of course, that's the wrong component. And let me define smog for you. And they go on and on and on and on and on. All the reasons why diesel smoke, which was the major polluter, wasn't really pollution. Now, are they saying the major source of pollution is diesels? You know, and people don't remember they were lying before. I think that diesels have always been a major source, but they did not want the solution 20 years ago because then they wouldn't have been able to put all the regulations onto cars. So they left the diesels out there, created the pollution. Now they've got everything under control. They're going to the cars, and the same thing is true with water. They're simply lying. They say, there's lots of you think there's lots of water.
Yeah.
But don't you realize there's water shortages all over the world? We're running out of water. And I look out from my yard, and I look out over the ocean, and I say, we're running out of water? But, of course, they say it often enough. Doesn't matter how ridiculous, people will believe.
And also, if we keep hearing news over and over and over again, and then they bring in new news broadcasts, they figure people are going to forget the news that they heard even a few days ago or last week, so they can change the story and how many people will call them on it to
choose their own agenda.
To,
I mean, the thing is, we went to war with Afghanistan because of the wicked Osama bin Laden. You know, and now everybody's forgotten Osama bin Laden got away, and now we got the wicked Saddam Hussein we got to go to war with. And maybe it'll be next to Kim Il-jong or something, the next one. Who knows who the next wicked person will be?
Stan Gorbachev says they're writing a new set of 10 or 15 commandments to replace the original 10, and I think that's because they don't like the commandment that says, thou shalt not lie.
That's the Earth
thou
Charter.
Thou shalt not kill.
That's the Earth Charter that now is resting in the Ark of Hope. Isn't that nice? Doesn't that make you feel warm and fuzzy to know that Gorbachev, the ruthless dictator, the butcher of Afghanistan, is working with Stephen Rockefeller and Marie Strong to write the new Ten Commandments for the world? And where's the outcry from the American church? Why, it's deafening in its silence.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye,
bye, Jeanette.
Okay, and thanks, and I think Jeanette's absolutely right. And, you know, it doesn't matter. You can see the water just rushing down the street. Why aren't we saving the water, you know, now and putting it into reservoirs or ponds or something? We can't do that. We have to have more environmental impact studies. And then they say, look at the, there's no water, salt water intrusion. Why? Because they block the building of the reservoirs that would have driven the salt water out.
Each year in Santa Cruz County, we lose to the ocean water that runs down into the ocean, 95,000 acre feet. It is amazing. and we just let it run in the ocean. We don't put it in dams to help us. Now, I know Watsonville is always talking about overdraft, about 45,000 acre feet. And here we lose 95,000 acre feet into the ocean. Amazing.
Right.
Jeannie, you were mentioning when we talked before the show that the people are only going to be allowed to use recycled water. Mm-hmm. And that's really sickening when you think of all of the genetic modifications that have been made, and we have all these viruses and germs that are people are dying of and so sick of, and this is in our water, and then they want to put this on our food and have us bathe in this and make it our drinking water.
Well, it's a good way to kill us off, for sure. And then we'll just blame it on polluted water, whatever. But about 4 months ago, I went to the Gaia conference, and they were advertising it on the radio, and it says nothing about religion or spirituality. We just want to talk about sustainability.
This is the Gaia conference.
Then. Yes, down in Santa Cruz Civic Auditorium.
And isn't that amazing? Because the underlying component of sustainability is a whole spiritual issue. In fact, it's stated in the Agenda 21 document and in the forestry documents about the spirituality and the religious. Those two terms are used in the documents we've been talking about tonight.
Well, didn't Stephen Rockefeller write a book on environment and spirituality?
Nature and Spirit and Nature? Was it Nature and Spirit and Nature, wasn't it?
Yes, and he subtitled it Why the Environment is a Religious Issue, and he edited, it was a book that he edited 10 years ago.
Oh, interesting. Because at this Gaia conference, there was a man, he was Michael Reynolds, and to me he looked like an old hippie.
Let's not get so much into the names here.
He created Earthship. And it was interesting because he talked about having a sustainable home, and the sewage system would be in the living room of your home. He said inside would be a jungle, and the plants would always be eating your sewage in the living room.
Plants would be eating the sewage in the living room?
Yeah, cleaning up the water. And what astounded me, he said, the people will be in cages, wildlife will be running free outside.
This was at the Gaia conference that you attended, and the people in cages, it sort of like, sounds like the Planet of the Apes, doesn't it?
Well, it was just amazing to sit there for 2 days and listen to all of this, but they are serious.
Well, I think they're deadly serious, and people really don't understand. These people have a different worldview, totally different. But the trouble is they have the power. They have the people in Sacramento who are voting for their legislation, because the good people are just too busy watching the 49ers lose their football game.
And, you know, Jeannie, you were talking about the impact on the farmers and how they'll be dictated which crops they can grow based upon the efficiency of resources like water and whether they'll be allowed to use water. In fact, isn't it interesting, this dairy property north of us that cost millions and millions of dollars, farmers, they're forcing the farmers off of that now because they're not allowing them to use water. What I'd like to point out is when I was at the Millennium Summit in 2000, Kofi Annan, who is the head of the United Nations, provided us a Millennium Summit multilateral treaty framework. And he said, and of course there are about, 500, just hundreds of treaties that are before the United Nations for consideration at any one time. He handed us a book and said that these are the top 25 treaties that they're working on. And if there are any farmers out in the audience, you might be interested to know that number 13 on this list is the International Convention on the Protection of the Rights of Migrant Workers and Their Families. And this will directly impact the farms. And it establishes criteria irrespective of the migrant's legal status in a country, and it will provide these international independent experts to come in and dictate under what terms and conditions you will provide for your workers on your farms.
Well, it's amazing the things that they're doing. It's all being coordinated. It's all planned. Of course, Kofi Annan, you remember, he was the one who refused to allow the United Nations to intervene when they were slaughtering the 100,000 Tutsis, Christians in Rwanda back in 1994. And of course, when the Canadian commander of the UN forces wanted to intervene, he was ordered not to. That was Kofi Annan. The man, of course, wants to regulate everything and wants to regulate migrant farmers. We'll be right back here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we have to remind you that Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will decide right now you're going to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours a day, as we reach out by the miracle of radio and internet, and 5 hours each, and then, of course, by satellite for 3 hours and shortwave by 2 hours. And we're reaching more and more people. It's really exciting to know that people are telling people who are telling people, and people I talked to a doctor just the other day. We're going to have her on, I think, next week or the week after that. And somebody, giving her copies of our tape sets, and she's gotten to know about our interview programs and really agrees personally with so much of what we're talking about. There are an awful lot of people out there who know there's a problem, but they don't know where to go, where they're going to be able to get the information, because the key information is not being brought out. None of our conservative organizations, even though they may be politically conservative, and they may even believe in the Council on Foreign Relations, and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission, they warn about that, but they never warn about the spiritual forces behind them, or how this whole brotherhood of darkness works together for the common goal, the New World Order and the New World Religion. And, of course, the world will be ruled by demonic forces. That's what it's really all about. And until you understand that, nothing really makes sense. So if you'd like to become part of our team, if you'd like to become part of the Radio Liberty family of supporters, it's as simple as calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And, of course, the family members get 4 best tapes of the month, a monthly newsletter, or we'd be glad to send you free of charge right now, maybe our December newsletter that deals with finances, or a November newsletter that, of course, introduces you to the what's going on today. My October newsletter is one of my favorites. It's the testimony of Kristen Breitweiser before the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence on the 18th of September of last year. Testimony that was totally suppressed by the mass media. And when you read her testimony, which is included in total in our October newsletter, you'll understand what really happened on September 11th, testimony which was actively suppressed by the controlled media in America. So if you'd like a copy of any one of those free newsletters and you haven't had one before, give us a call at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, you can pull down the newsletters off our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can get our programs there, 5 hours a day, 3 hours of Radio Liberty. And then, of course, you can link to the other two networks we're on, American Freedom Network, Genesis Network. And, of course, it'll be so important that you get the information and then help us to get it to others. Tell your friends about our radio programs. Tell them about our shortwave and our internet programs at radioliberty.com. And help us to get the truth out across America while we still have the opportunity. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course our guest this evening is Joan Paris and Jeannie Soderman, and we're going to have a 4-tape set. We'll be pairing this here very, very soon with this evening's programs, and then programs we've done previously with Jean and Joan together, and I think we'll probably put together a 4-tape set just of Joan, a 4-tape set of Jeannie, because they all have such fascinating information, and you need to have this information and get the documentation they have. And certainly Jeannie has done a wonderful job summarizing the Sustainable Development Report. It's called the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, put out by the Cambridge University Press. It is put out by UNEP. It is the master plan for the destruction of Western civilization. And, of course, you don't want to read 1,142 pages. You can still get the report. I have one. I know Jeannie has one. But you can get the summary. It's only about 40 pages, and a lot of those pages are just half pages. The information is there. The World Bank water policy is there. Get the Sustainable Development Syllabus. You need that to understand what's really going on in the world today. Who's going to pick up here?
Well, I think it'd be interesting that Measure C, which was passed in Santa Cruz County in 1990, it was for only 10 years, and that is Agenda 21.
And this was even before the 92 conference.
Yes, it was. Yes, so they knew what was coming up. It had been in the works since the 1980s.
Or even back to 72 at the Stockholm conference.
Yeah.
But there were just so few involved in that time.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing they want the people to think, it's this local initiative. It's not a local initiative. It's part of the world fascist system.
Right. And every year, the county of Santa Cruz has to make a progress report on Measure C. And they send that report to the Sierra Club.
Isn't that nice?
The Environmental Council and Action Santa Cruz. Of course, Action Santa Cruz was the one that had workshops and created local Agenda 21 plan here. But the Environmental Council has a plan, and I picked up the plan at the Gaia conference a couple months ago. And the Environmental Council of Santa Cruz County, they're going to create a sustainable community. It'll be called Natural Bridges Program. And they are going to have it designed by 2004, and then the ecological stewardship, everything coming under 2006. And it should be ready by 2008. It's a 10-acre site.
Okay, fine. And then what will they do? They'll begin moving people into that?
Yes, right.
Does the average individual have any idea what's going on, do you think?
You know, I believe the people at the top of the organizations do.
Oh, of course they do. But I'm talking about the average citizen in Santa Cruz doesn't even know what a sustainable community is. So what is this going to be in this sustainable community they're going to build out there in this 10-acre site by Natural Bridges?
Well, you can go down and see one now. I just went today at the corner of Laurel Street and Chestnut. This sustainable community was finished in March of last year.
Now, what is a sustainable community that they have there?
Well, they have shops on the first floor, but they're all empty right now, business shops.
Well, this is that new development that's starting there, right?
Santa Cruz County.
Where the railway tracks run?
Yes, correct. And they're three stories high, and there's living quarters on the second and third stories. And there's a homeless garden across the railroad tracks because you will have a community garden. And then there's no garages. There's no green lawns. It's fascinating to go down and look at it, but they're all like in clusters, and that's what they call clusters, where you work on the bottom floor, and you live up on the second and third story.
No, so do you work on the bottom floor, or is that where you do your shopping? I mean, because some of them are the shopping were on the bottom floor. You worked on the second floor, and then you lived in the third. That was what burned down over in San Jose recently. Those are all sustainable communities.
Yeah, I guess they're doing it differently in different areas.
Right.
But they do have a bus stop in front of this sustainable community. And there was a gal that came out of one of the apartments, and I asked her, well, how much are you paying for this? She says, well, we have a small two-bedroom apartment, $1,600 a month. That is astronomical. And
probably in Santa Cruz, they're glad to get it, but, you know, are they filled up? Are the housing filled up yet?
They look like maybe 70% filled, but I believe there's like four or five or six people living in those two-bedroom apartments, because I talked to other people down there, and they said they had to live with other people in order to pay the rent.
That doesn't sound very sustainable. In San Jose, I know they're charging thousands of dollars for those apartments, and they're just not being filled up. But these, of course, are designed to limit our movement and put us into these zones, these regions.
And of course, people don't understand they're putting in the bike lanes. Why? Because they want to get you out of your cars. That's what it's really all about. This is long-range planning. You know, I know on Soquel Avenue, and our listeners across the country don't know Soquel, but it's an ideal city arterial if it was ever widened. But they have allowed specifically buildings to be built in recent years right directly on the street. Why? So you couldn't widen it. See, you could not build a thoroughfare, so you'd have cars bumper to bumper. Why? Because they want control through chaos. They've done the same thing with our major Highway 1 here. They've been talking for 30 years about widening Highway 1. They have no intention of doing anything to solve the problem. They want the problem so they can force people into carpools, and then eventually, onto buses and onto trains, and then, of course, hopefully an awful lot of them will get their nice little bicycles. Well, we've got if you're out there in the listening audience and you agree or disagree, our telephone number is 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And our guests this evening, Jeannie Soderman and Joan Paris, we're talking about sustainable communities, sustainable development, and of course, how they're going to use water to control the population.
Now, the Environmental Council, on their papers that I picked up at the Gaia conference, they said they're going to align with the State of the World Forum annual conferences.
No, that's Gorbachev, of course.
Yes.
People don't understand. Here's the former dictator of Russia, and Earth Council is going to be aligning with the former head of the Soviet KGB, the former head of Russia. What's wrong with this picture? He is a lifelong communist. He's still a communist. And the whole concept is communitarianism or communism.
Yeah, that was interesting. That was the Environmental Council, Dr. Stan.
And I've been to so many of those Gorbachev conferences. And in fact, I've talked to James Garrison, who went to Russia to talk to Gorbachev to bring him over here and set up this organization. And in 2000, in a private conference, I asked him if the Gorbachev organization wasn't positioning itself to become the umbrella organization over all of the NGOs. And he kind of scoffed at that, but then later, in this last Earth conference, you see these different ones jockeying for position, and in fact, that is what they've been attempting to do, is to become an umbrella organization over the NGOs. So it's interesting.
Well, of course, Gorbachev is smart enough to understand that what you want is a top-down fascist regime, and he's quite willing, since we're willing to give him the power, to accept it. But of course, behind Gorbachev is a spiritual force. And James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, in the book we have the pages for, and if you'd like to know, comments that he was leaving the airport leaving for the airport in Moscow with a very highly placed member of the Communist Party who said, well, you know, things weren't so bad here until Gorbachev went to England and Margaret Thatcher inducted him into a secret Masonic lodge. Gorbachev, a Mason, secret Masonic lodge, Margaret Thatcher, this great Christian lady, part of a secret occult lodge. Well, of course, she's a member of the Order of the Garter at the present time. Do you really think that they'd let a real conservative lead the British government for so many years? But then, of course, you can convince the American people of anything. You say often that we had Harold calling from Capitola, and we lost him. If you'd like to call back in, feel free to go ahead.
And also, the Gorbachev conferences are always, with the exception of the one that corresponded with the Millennium Summit, and they held it in New York, they're always held on the top of Knob Hill at the Fairmont. There is one floor that is used, different rooms for the different occult groups that show up. And one group from Hawaii, they worship the pig god. And you see, if you want to go and observe all of these occult rituals and things being performed. And then when we go to some of our meetings and our closing conference at the Gorbachev State of the World Summits, they move us down to the Masonic Lodge, just, you know, a block or so down Knob Hill. So it's one of the world headquarters of Masonic activities. Another thing I'd like to point out about the Gorbachev organization, when you say that this Environmental Council is aligning itself with the Gorbachev, is I've heard Maurice Strong talk about, you know, reforming the United Nations and changing things, and then the different groups that merge talk about a change to the United Nations in providing what's called a people's parliament or a people's assembly, because you're going to take away all the freedoms and put them under this real strict controls. You want to appease them in making them feel like they have some kind of a voice. And so they're the organization, I believe, that would oversee, again, the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations, which is supposedly the voice of the people, and then oversee this people's parliament within the United Nations.
Yeah.
Very interesting dynamics that go on.
Well, you know, it's so interesting, this environmental movement. Of course, they have a day that they celebrate the environmental movement. What's the day? It's called Earth Day. I mean, and of course, children all across America celebrate Earth Day in schools. Of course, you know what Earth Day really is, don't you?
Lenin's birthday.
Lenin's birthday. Isn't that interesting? Of all the days of the year that they could have picked for Earth Day, it was Lenin's birthday. Well, of course they did, because this whole thing has to do with world fascism.
Well, and this flyer that Jeannie has on the Environmental Council, if you look at the symbol up in the upper left-hand corner, and you're familiar with occult symbolism, which all of this is involved with, you will find Ouroboros. It's the symbol of a snake swallowing its tail.
Really? That was on the front page of the Scottish Rite magazine, the latest one. That is, of course, tied into the 28th title. And you have to, for our listener out there, it looks like a circle, but you'll see the head of the snake swallowing its tail. What do you call that?
Ouroboros.
Ouroboros. And, of course, all these occult symbols are there. It's sort of like they put the pyramid with the all-seeing eye on the DARPA website, on Admiral Poindexter's website. They took it down when we started talking about it. I'm glad to know that they're listening to our programs. But we do have a copy of that, and if you'd like a copy, why, we'd be glad to send it to you free of charge, although not in color. It was in living color initially. This occult symbol of the ancient secret societies on the DARPA webpage? Well, why not? It's on the back of the dollar bill. It's on the back of the Great Seal of the United States. Of course, any of you who would like to see that, you can get the movie The Man Who Would Be King with Sean Connery and watch it. And it all centers around the pyramid, pardon me, the triangle with the all-seeing eye inside.
Well, and Dr. Stan, you carry this book by Dr. Kathy Burns of occult symbols,
right.
And your listeners really, if they're interested in that, could contact you to purchase a copy of that book.
Masonic and occult symbols, you have to understand they're everywhere. They hide them in plain sight because they feel you're too stupid to understand what it's all about.
And Jeannie, you know, these eco-villages that you were talking about are sustainable communities. There is an organization called the Gaia Trust and the Global Eco-Village Network. And what you're describing, of course, is one of these eco-villages. They take different forms, but they have certain components that are common to all of them. And you opened up the show with your definition of sustainability, which said that the sustainable community is one which provides all of its needs for air, water, land, food, fiber, energy resources, all within its own boundaries. So these are little communities. And it's interesting that this is a Gaia concept, because this, again, is the occult, which ties into the Earth Charter from Stephen Rockefeller, promoted by Mikhail Gorbachev, and it's that whole occult, this Mother Nature, this deification, and pantheism, and all of these things that we talked about, the businesses, and all of these initiatives call for a new set of core values.
Oh, yes. In fact, the sustainable community that is going to be built and by the Environmental Council, they talk about religion and spirituality and how we connect to the earth and the planet. So that is very prevalent in sustainable communities. In the Earth Charter, it hasn't passed yet, but they're doing a lot of propaganda on it, are they not?
Well, what's interesting, at the Millennium Summit, I asked woman from Finland, who was the co-chair of the Millennium Summit, if she thought this was going to be adopted. And she said, it doesn't matter if it's adopted or not. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking I was a proponent. She said, all of the precepts are embedded in everything we do.
In other words, it's all a slam dunk. And it will be carried out, whether it's adopted or not. This is what's going to happen because we want it to happen. We're not interested in whether people want it or not. We elitists know what's best for us, those common folks.
Well, there's an international covenant on environment and development, and it hasn't been passed yet. But they're saying at the preamble of this particular covenant that it is affirming the essential duty of all to respect and preserve the environment. And it says it will be the legal framework to provide individuals, states, and other entities with ecological and ethical guidance.
And that's a very important document. It was done under the auspices of the IUCN, and it was initiated immediately after the 1972 Stockholm Conference when they began their environmental global planning.
So the IUCN, is that the International Union of the Conservation of Nature?
Yes, ma'am.
So they've been doing it for a long time. It's been in the background.
And what people don't understand is you really, if you've never read the report from Iron Mountain, you need to get it and read it. And they were trying to figure out how to control the people if we didn't have wars. And they said, well, we could try to scare them into believing they're critters from outer space, you know, and that we were endangered by these extraterrestrials. But, you know, even better would be the environment. And we might have to contaminate the whole Earth. But, of course, then we can rally the people to protect the environment. And they have been. Who's the greatest polluter in America today? The United States government at Rocky Flats and Hanford. You know, it's going to tell us, I don't know how many $100 billion to clean up the mess the government created. But, of course, in the process, we have to regulate everything and everybody. And time and time and time again, they create the problem, and then they move to solve it. But on the real problems, for instance, poisoning our water with fluoride, and, of course, they've convinced the doctors and the dentists there's no problem there, but they know exactly what they're doing. They know the danger of the mercury and the amalgam. They know the danger of the mercury and the vaccines, the poisoning. But, of course, instead of talking about these things, they talk about the water shortage. Oh, the water shortage, you know. The poor little grizzly bear that doesn't get a chance to prowl the mountains in Santa Cruz any longer. Mm-hmm. And, of course, how gullible can the American people be? Well, when they hear the truth, I think many of them recognize what's going on. And that's why you out there in the audience have to help us to get the truth out. And what Jeannie and Joan have said tonight is so vitally important.
People that are listening throughout the United States, there are other names for Local Agenda 21. And there was a paper written by J. Gary Lawrence. And he's a mover and shaker of one of the key thinkers of sustainable development. And he was an advisor to the U.S. President's Council on Sustainable Development and also USAID. He also was a delegate to the 1996 Habitat II conference. And on the second page of his report, he said, in the case of the U.S., our local authorities are engaged in planning processes consistent with Local Agenda 21, but there is little interest in using the name Agenda 21. So he says, we will call our process something else, such as comprehensive planning, growth management, or smart growth. So look for those names. If you see comprehensive planning, growth management, or smart growth, you know they're the International Agenda 21 program.
Well, they know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know because, you know, a certain number of people have heard of Agenda 21, and they know it's bad, so they just change the name. But, of course, the process continues exactly the same. And behind that are the spiritual forces that Jeannie and Joan have been talking about today, which motivates these people who would transform society from a free society into this corporate fascist society. Because who is it who finances the environmental movement? It's the people of great wealth. It's the Rockefellers and the Fords and, you know, and the great tax-exempt foundations that are out there working like a thief by night, taking a little here, a little there. And of course, if we can ever expose them, if we can ever bring them into the light, they would flee like a vampire at the first rays of dawn. It's about time you help us do it.
That's really the only explanation you can have for all of this, Dr. Sand, because as you say, these are the wealthiest people in the world who are behind the promotion of all of this, and there can be no other reason because they already have more resources than they could possibly use or spend in a lifetime or for generations. And Stephen Rockefeller, who put together the Earth Charter, in the Earth Charter it says that that this is a new world religion and that the protection of Earth's vitality, diversity, and beauty is a sacred trust. So they constantly refer to it in spiritual and religious terms. And incorporated in all of the changes, it talks about changes in values, behaviors, and attitudes, not only of governments, but the private sector and the civil society. So there is always talk of changing values, of changing norms, of changing beliefs, this whole spirituality. And it's not the spirituality of the Jew, it's not the spirituality of the Christian, nor of the Islamic person, but it replaces it with a very dark, evil spirituality. Barbara Marx Hubbard, the whole population control agenda ties into this, and this is why we end up with so much misery and death and disease and plagues. It's horrible.
You know, and as you spoke of the changing of the attitude and values and beliefs, that's exactly the term that Alan Crist uses when he's talking about the new program they have, No Child Left Behind. President Bush's, and of course it's really Bobby Kennedy, pardon me, Teddy Kennedy and Bob, and George Bush pushed through this new legislation, the new federal program, aimed not at teaching children how to read and write and arithmetic, but of course it taught them change of attitudes and values and beliefs. Attitudes, values, and beliefs. The same term you used is exactly what the president is imposing upon in the name of local control. It's really federal control over education for changing of attitudes, values, and beliefs. That's so important people understand. They're not interested in our generation. They want the souls of the children.
That was a great book. It's called Fed Ed, and
right.
You carry it on Radio Liberty.
Right, we do. And we think it's such an important book.
Well, hopefully what Joan and I have given you the information tonight, that you will take it, and it will help you to research and understand the blueprint that is going to be coming down on us. Go to the Board of Supervisors, your commissioners. They're the ones that are implementing this program in the city council members.
All right. Well, that's, of course, it behooves us to get to the people on the city council. And apparently there are a couple of pretty good people on the Watsonville City Council. We just need to get them informed and educated what this is all about. If we could get them to listen to this four-tape set, why we could change their whole analysis and perspective. Do you have a 20-second closure, Jeannie?
Well, we're here for education, and that's what a free society is all about, to be informed.
Joan, your parting thoughts?
To dispel the hypocrisy and the deceit, the churches really need to regain their spiritual authority, and if our pastors aren't willing or able to do that, then the individual members of their congregations have to pray and take that authority.
God bless you both. Thank you so much. It's been a fascinating evening, and so please pray for America. Pray for our leaders, and pray that the American people will turn back to God, because if they don't, God is going to turn his back on the American people. And finally, we ask you to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until next, tomorrow at the same time, Dr. Stan, good night, and may the Lord be with you.
Have the assessment every... everywhere. We'll do that on Thursday. These are the targets and the social part of it, too.
Well, I'm going to make a 14th set on this. You got the your videos in the mail. Or if you so we're not a digital copy of them.
Oh!
And you can tell them, and you can market them, and take them to the community, and talk to the 14th set, and talk to why you can, but we'll make a 14th set for them, we'll make it, probably a couple of them, we'll make them one piece by this program, the one we've had before. It's really great.
I'll be speaking to a group of Republican women Wednesday morning in Los Angeles, so I'll tell them that those things are available.
Right. Yeah. I'm sorry we don't have my least got to talk more about that every day. And you know, so that we
they're on their way, supposedly.
It's in the mail.
No, yeah, so it's in short.